Hello, and welcome to our special series of Green Elephant interviews during March 2021, supporting the annual B Corps Month. B Corporations, or B Corps for short, are businesses that meet the highest standards of verified social and environmental performance, public transparency, and legal accountability to balance profit and purpose. Throughout March, we are chatting with key people in companies which have chosen to certify as B Corps and become a force for good. Today, I've been joined by Josie Morris from the Wool Packaging Company. The Wool Packaging Company is a second-generation family business which creates insulated packaging using 100% pure wool in a product called Wool Cool. That's not the easiest word to say, is it? Good old English language. They have an impressive collection of clients and awards, not least of which is the Queen's Award for Enterprise and Innovation in 2018. Launched in 2008, they've been a certified B Corporation for 1 year. Now, Josie, having studied the classics and started off in sportswear sales, is now Managing Director, having worked up through the ranks of the company over 7 years. Two phrases might give you a measure of Josie that I read. Always striving to further my knowledge every day in every way I can, and always ask questions. If you don't ask, you'll never get to know. So, as I want to know stuff, welcome to the show, Josie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I have to say, Wool Cool, whenever you obviously explain your email address to someone, you say at Wool Cool. The amount of times I've had to repeat what I said and spell it out.
I know it's one of the, you think it's easy, it's two, wool and it's cool. But it's with the two O's in English. Poor, yeah. I do feel sorry for people who have to learn English as a second language.
I know, yeah, tell me about it. Yeah, I struggle with it as a first language.
Another quote I read in a nice little interview, I won't tell people where it is, it's all right. It said, you quite like the expression, and this too will pass. I hope you don't feel that about this interview.
Not at all.
I mentioned that you started you did your education and you became had an MA in the classics. How the blazes did you get into wool?
So as you say, I started off in classics, and when I was at school, I actually wanted to go into journalism. So I was quite like writing, if I'm honest. That's one of the things I quite like doing, and I don't do it so much at all now, but it was something I enjoy those subjects. And I'm fascinated by history and the fact that you can learn a lot from history. And so it seemed like quite a good start to go for with classics. And probably actually after I applied for uni, I decided I didn't want to go into journalism anymore because I didn't really like, I'm going to be honest, the tabloid, that kind of world didn't sit so well with me. But at the same time, I know there's plenty of other types of journalism, but at the time,
yes,
I think that's what I was thinking. So anyway, I'd always been quite interested in business. My mum has always had her own business, and it's something that I've always been quite, always thought I'd love to do something within business, in inverted commas. So I thought classics was a good mix to give me
all right
options, and also something to enjoy at uni and further my knowledge around history. And then brings me to Wool today, which is I got the opportunity 7 years ago when it's my mother's business. And she said to me, I'd been in sales, I'd been in various roles around that. And she asked me to come into the business because they were looking for a salesperson. That's kind of how I started in Wool. And I actually never thought, when I was 14, 15 and thinking ahead, would I ever think I was selling wool? Or packaging? Probably not.
No. And you didn't just grow into the family business day one. You kind of went off and stretched your legs elsewhere briefly in sportswear sales, but it wasn't a natural thing just to join the business.
No, I think as any family business, I mean, there's a few stories about how people get into family businesses. One of them is they kind of fall into it because they're helping out on a summer. Now, I do say sometimes that I've been in the family business since I was born because my mum having her own business. And so so she started as a packaging consultant, and that's kind of where Woolcool grew out of, was a project she was working on. But I actually, at the tender age of, I won't say how old, because I'm not sure if it's acceptable to have a child working, but me and my sisters used to do some packing and stuff, not of the Woolcool because that wasn't around at the time, but we used to do some packing of boxes and stuff at home in the garage. So it's always been part of a family business, but I wanted to leave university and go out on my own to understand, was I in the family business for the right reason if I went into it? And also, I think it gave me so much experience outside of the business, that I could hopefully, at least a little bit of it, I could bring to the role I was going into.
Bring something new. That's interesting. Family businesses have their, I mean, it's a difficult divide, isn't it? You know, you probably enjoy, like I do, family get-togethers. Are they the same when you're all in business together?
Good question. I mean, my sister works with me as well now. And to say now, she's been with the business almost as long as I have. And I think what you do find is your relationship does tend to go towards talking about the business and talking about, you know, they have a thing with family businesses about Sunday lunch decisions. And so I think the good thing is I've got a really strong relationship with my mum and my sister. My mum's starting to step away a little bit from the day-to-day running, so it's me and my sister. But yeah, you're right, it can be challenging to separate the family and the business, but actually what ends up happening is, as long as you communicate, I think the thing I've learned the most is to communicate, and to kind of talk through what you're feeling with someone rather than bottling it up and waiting for it to explode.
Yeah, I must admit, I've never worked in a family business, but obviously I've supported or helped a few that have, and they do that Sunday lunchtime decisions. The downside is there's a danger you never get away from work and getting that balance between family as a business and family as a family. Yeah. Must be quite hard to strike sometimes. Let's talk a little bit about the wool, the Woolcool product. Where did that spring from?
So actually it was my mum, Angela, who was, as I say, she was a packaging consultant and has you know, been in the industry since, I'm not sure whether I should say how old she is, because I think if she listened to this or everyone knew, I don't know if that's okay, is it?
I don't think so. I don't know why, but it doesn't feel right.
So 40 odd years, let's say. She was in the packaging industry and obviously now is starting to step away from the day-to-day, I was saying. But she was working with the National Trust back in early 2000s. And it was a project around sending meat in the post for their farmers. And National Trust very much around sustainability. They didn't want to use polystyrene for the shipment, which was what would have been used by those farmers. And around the time of foot and mouth, the farmers would have, the farmers were struggling because of foot and mouth at the time, so they wanted them to get more value out of their farms. Anyway, long story short, she did a lot of research into various materials and came across wool as a good insulator and developed the box, and kind of from day one it outperformed the alternatives in the market. So that's kind of where it was born, really. And then it's just kind of, as anything, it's kind of got traction and grown from there. And then the online food market has got traction, and the pharmaceutical sector. So it's been quite an organic growth in many ways, I'd say.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because wool's had a bit of a tough time, hasn't it? As well as a commodity, its value has dived from what it was. Well, even 30 years ago, it's pennies for a fleece sort of thing. Do you see that turning around as wool gets realised as the fantastic qualities it's got?
I mean, I think the challenge with anything natural is it's kind of been replaced by alternatives, hasn't it, really? And I think some of the challenges with wool is that it's seen as a old material and yeah. something like, oh, we're better than that now. When actually the truth of it with wool is it's renewable, sustainable, recyclable, biodegradable, strong, you know, it's all those things. It absorbs moisture, it's insulative, it's protective, like all of those things. It's a great woolly jumper, you know, think of a woolly jumper, you know, it's a great jumper at Christmas. You know, it's all those things that actually we're trying to strive for in those materials we make as men and women, man-made. And I think what we've experienced over the last, when we first started out actually, was to get over that hurdle of it being seen as, oh, we're going backwards almost by using that material. But yeah, I think to answer your question, I'm not sure where the wool trade will go from a costing point of view, but I do hope that some of what we're doing and some of the other great companies working with natural materials are showing that natural materials have massive value and have also a sustainable future. And that's kind of my take on the wool trade. But I hope the farmers get a better value for their wool, because it's just the value of wool is too low for what an awesome material it is.
Yeah, yeah. As I looked into it, you suddenly became to have a bigger appreciation for what it was, and then it's ridiculously undervalued. And also there's the argument, of course, with wool being out from sourced from an animal, albeit not killing the animal on the way through, is not tasteful to the vegans, so to speak. Is that been an issue for you, or?
So, I mean, facing it straight on with the direct answer is there's a mix of types of vegans that we come across, and I don't know a better way to put it than that, which is, obviously you've got your and I'm each to their own, you know, live the life you want to live is my view. I'm very much diverse and my stance is, you know, as long as you're not harming anyone, you know, live the life that you believe is what's right for you. And that's across all aspects of life. But I think from an eating point of view or a living point of view, there seems to be a few different types of vegans that we come across. Now, we actually have customers who are vegans who use wool. And actually the reason they use it is because the drive behind them being a vegan is around sustainability rather than animal. It's around, they're not necessarily focused on the animal.
On the ethical well-being.
They're around sustainability. So when they look at the options on the market, what's most sustainable, you know, they're living a sustainable life, which they're linking that, you know, veganism is a way to live a sustainable life that they want to live. That actually they see the wool as part of that. So it's a bit of a different, the animal question, it's wool and it comes from a sheep. So that comes down to the ethics of the human.
It does, taking
that view. But I think from a sustainability standpoint, I've got friends who are vegans from a sustainability standpoint or a health standpoint. Now the wool isn't an issue to them because one, they're doing it either from a health point of view or they're doing it from a sustainability point of view where they see the value of wool as sustainable material. Whereas the alternatives are polyester, which actually is probably causing more harm to more animals than wool. So it's complex. It's really complex.
It is a balance, isn't it? I mean, it is all these things. It's a balance, and we need to be in balance with the world. But pumping microplastics into the world is no real.
I welcome. I've actually had quite a few chats. I personally will take calls from people who have a concern around the vegan side.
Okay.
And I've had quite a few chats with them. I will face it head on and talk to them about why I believe wool is better than what's out there and as an option why I can, you know, I'm. I think for me it's around that having an open and knowledgeable educative, is that a word?
I think so.
Conversation, you know, it's having that conversation where you're going, you've got the headline and then you've got the facts, and it's being open to have that dialogue rather than just having an argument that no one really gets anywhere. I'm very much around, you know, the context rather than the headline.
Yeah. I won't add to that. I think that rounds it up nicely. I'll move on to my next thought, which is obviously the product is quite innovative, and therefore you won the Queen's Award for Enterprise in Innovation in 2018. Was How did that recognition come about? Probably would be my answer question.
So it was actually our managing director at the time before I took on the role, Keith, who and Angela actually, who both recognised that that was an award that would be mean a lot to the company. Based on the fact that one, the Prince of Wales, Prince Charles, absolutely loves wool. He's an advocate of wool. He's actually a patron, I think, of the Campaign for Wool. And he did actually come to visit Walkall a year or so ago, last year went really quickly. So he came to visit us and he was very much an advocate of wool. Now the reason we went for the Queen's Award was because we wanted something that showed the depth of the innovation that we had, and actually was respected not just in the UK but globally, and particularly, you know, in your like America and particularly in Europe, really, there's something around the Queen's Award that people, you know, see as it's credential, isn't it? It's credential, it's credability. And yeah, it was part of us building that credibility around wool, that again, it's not just an old idea, it's not just an old material, it's something that's got some innovation and real passionate science behind it. And the other reason is I guess, it was something that we felt was a good benchmark and to show what we'd achieved so far. And if we could get it, it would show just how far we'd come as a company and an innovation.
Yeah, and it's an impressive award, and I think it's got long life in it as well, isn't it? You get some awards and, oh, that was a 2019 award, but yeah, that one sticks. And it's interesting that the Queen and that brand carries such such import outside of the UK.
Yeah, there's a respect for it, I think. You know, regardless of what goes on in the media or anything around that, I think really there's a respect for British made and relation to that kind of heritage of the royal family. And I think there's something around that the Queen's not going to put a stamp on something that, you know, it's not the Queen's stamp, but you know what I mean? There's not going to be that, you know, engagement with something if it wasn't genuinely what it was. And I think, you know, that has a massive, massive value to it globally, I think, you know.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So you also striven after other probably more technical awards like the ISO 14001 and the 9001 mm-hmm. accreditations, which are for 14001 is environmental management, isn't it? And 9001 is quality management. Why do you pursue those as well?
So some of that was around quality management systems for some of the companies we were supplying. So we're going into the pharmaceutical sector more and more.
Some
really stringent regulations there. And what it allows is, one, for us to almost externally prove the quality. We've been audited externally, basically, that says we're doing what we say we're going to do. And also with the companies we were going into, it's almost a requirement. And I think the way we approached ISO is it's very much about continual improvement for both 9001 and 14001. So it was a way for us not only to certify and show people what we're already doing, but also to have systems in place internally that would allow us to continue to improve. I think, you know, it's that classic statement is we're not perfect. We're nowhere near where we could be and want to be, and you know, there's a lot we can change, and I'm someone who always drives improvement, and I never think we are perfect, you know, and I think, but those systems allow us to, one, gain credibility, two, grow within that structure, but also have that kind of ethos within the business of continually improving and looking to places to improve, which can do people's head in sometimes, I have to be honest with you.
Presumably that kind of led you towards B Corp as a as a certification. How did you find out about B Corp start off with?
So I found out about B Corp probably 3 or 4 years ago, and I met a guy, a company I was working with at the time, who mentioned it to me, and said, would you be interested? And I was like, yes, but at the moment there's so much going on, like I don't know if we're quite there yet. So it's always been in the back of my mind. And I think one of the things for me with B Corp that attracted me and the business was actually the ethos around looking after people and also the environment, but also making profit, because actually business isn't not about making profit. And profit isn't a dirty word. It's something that businesses have to make to grow, and something that actually businesses need. But it's not profit at all costs. And I think that's what I quite like about B Corp, is my perception of business as a youngster was that sometimes some businesses, it felt like profit at all costs, and some great businesses that aren't like that at all. But I think, you know, I wanted to kind of, within Walker, we wanted that to be, you know, business that had a social conscience, maybe that's a cheesy way of putting it, but like social environmental conscience. But then B Corp, kind of the ethos of B Corp and that certification allowed kind of us to show that externally, again, similar to ISO, where we're kind of doing what we say we're going to do and someone else is backing us up that we are doing that, rather than just us saying it.
Yeah. And kind of leads me to one of the questions I had, which was, or specific questions I had, is was becoming certified an easy process?
I reckon B Corp might want me to say, yeah, it's really easy, everyone do it. But I think it wasn't, do you know what? For what it is, it should be hard, and it shouldn't be an easy process. And actually, if I answer that question yes, I think it wouldn't be B Corp. So I think it takes time and it takes effort and it takes kind of spreadsheets or whatever it is you want to fill in to send across. I have to say the support of the B Corp network has been awesome. The support of the people at B Lab and B Lab UK has been phenomenal, and I think certifying has been well worth it. So yes, it takes time, no, it's not easy, but I wouldn't expect it to be any less than that to get that certification. Does that make sense?
Well, presumably you wouldn't value it otherwise. Yeah, exactly. If it becomes an easy to get certification, anyone will get it and then it'll become worthless.
Exactly. But B Lab were great, I have to say. And the B Corp guys and girls were really helpful. And I think it's just around that patience and keep going. I mean, the guy that told me about B Corp, I rang him halfway through and said, I don't know if I can do this. And he said, no, when you get to the end, it'll be worth it. And that was the best advice anyone could give at the time. Just keep going.
There's a film about that. Wasn't it Dory? Just keep swimming. That was it.
We call it Finding B Corp.
Oh, maybe that should be the tagline for our series of programs, Finding B Corp. Being a B Corp, has it changed your strategy? Has it changed, you know, your plans for the next stage for the packaging company?
No, because I think we went for B Corp because it sat with our ethos. So we're already on that kind of path anyway. I think the thing it has done is it's made me think a little bit more about the things we could do. So we've just started doing our carbon footprint analysis, and I probably wouldn't have done it so soon if it wasn't for B Corp. That is a long process as well, but I think that'll be worth it. But I think it's those kind of things. And I think it's a sharing of ideas, isn't it? And actually, I think whether it's changed our path, I don't think it has, but whether it's helped to engage some of the ideas that, or some of the things we want to do, or sharing of knowledge, it definitely has started doing that. And it's how much you put into it, you get out of it, I guess.
Like anything in life, isn't it? Is how much you're prepared to commit to it and do the changes. Some of the feelings I got from others was that the assessment process, you can sometimes say, oh no, I don't do that, but actually if you say yes, I do, it opens up a whole stream of things perhaps you can think about doing. And so we found that quite useful.
Yeah, definitely.
So you put in, I saw something that you started working with Future Forest.
Yeah.
And what are you thinking about offsetting? Because it's one of those things that people kind of go, is it right or is it wrong? He's planting a tree right. But Future Forest, obviously, one project which does that kind of thing. Mm. How did you get into that?
So Future Forest, actually, I've been looking at offsetting and those kind of things for a while, and I still don't understand them. So first and foremost for me, planting trees is not buying offsetting, you know, that's not what I wanted to do, and I don't know enough about that yet to know if that's a route we'll go down in terms of purchasing. The thing that I liked about what the Future Forest guys were doing was more around planting the trees in the UK. When speaking to them, it's really, I think the challenge is with any of these things, because there's a market for it, there's a lot of people doing it, and it's very hard to know who to partner with. I think that's some of the challenge, really. And one of the things with the Future Forest guys was they were working with another customer of ours, and that then allowed us to kind of, they recommended them. And then I spoke to the guy there, and he said, well, the first thing you can do if you want is buy some trees. So we bought a tree for each of our team members, and they got a certificate saying they have a tree, and they've given the location of where that tree is in Scotland, and we can go and visit it on, you know, we can all travel. So I thought it was quite a nice, it's quite a nice story, really, and a nice thing for our team to have. So, and it also takes some, I can't remember the figures, so please don't ask me that question, but it's got a good carbon sequestering.
Sequestering, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you put a finger on why you value the B Corp, or why you and the company value the B Corp movement?
That's a very good question. I would say that I think it's really close to my values around, and I think that obviously because we're a family business as well, I think I share values with my sister and my mum. Obviously, I came from my mum, so, you know, from, and my dad, and the values there, we have shared values. And I think I felt like, from a value point of view, B Corp sat with the values. And I think what it did for us was to allow us to show people externally that the values we were saying we were doing was I guess, in keeping with that. That's quite a difficult question, but I would say that would probably answer it from our side. But value is, I think B Corp probably really described in fewer words than I am now, the how I felt about business, like business is a force for good, and that you can be a good business but also be good at the same time.
Yeah, you can be a profitable business whilst, you know, not doing, as you said, at all costs or at any cost.
Yeah.
We got to balance that between the people and the planet as well. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Now, I asked if you had an action you could share with people. I don't know if you've got anything you can share with us on that.
Yeah, sure. So I know this is a really silly action, and probably a lot of people do it anyway. But I was thinking around water usage.
Oh, right. We haven't had that one before.
No. So I know, I mean, I might be the only person who does this, but you know when you do your teeth and you leave the tap on? And that's another silly thing, but I was kind of thinking, like, if everyone only used the tap at the end of doing their teeth, how much water would be saved?
Yeah.
Like, it's a really silly little thing, but it's the same thing as anything, really. It's those little changes that you can make, and that would be. I don't know if that's the kind of action you were looking for.
To be honest, it's sometimes it's just something to make you think, you know, and that your actions. We're very privileged in our country to have clean tap water pretty well to every single household in the country. And we just turn on the tap and don't think about it. And it comes out hot and it comes out cold and great. People complain when it goes brown, you know, and yet you go watch some programmer and somebody's got to walk 5 miles with a tank to get muddy water. And then they drink that and we just pour water down the drain. And I think it's a great action. It's just if nothing else, just stand back and think about what you are using and running water. I always think to myself, I sometimes run the cold water and then fill my glass up. And you go, people in this world that drink warm water all day long, I think I'm sure I can cope with a minor, minorly tepid water instead of a fresh.
it is one that I know it's a small one, but you know, I think it's I don't know why I started doing it, but I just, when you asked me about an action, I kind of thought that is one that over the years I've been, for some reason, I can't remember what it was, but I've been mindful of it. And I thought that's one that I don't, and maybe it was just me who was leaving the tap on or switching it on too soon when you're doing your teeth. But if other people do it too, then, you know, it might help.
I think that's great. Thank you very much. And how about a recommendation? Have you got anything that we like to, we could go away and read or watch or...
I was thinking about this. I don't have anything that modern because the last year or so, my life has kind of been taken up with work. But I do have to say, anyone who hasn't watched it, I absolutely love Modern Family, the American programme. Now, the reason is there's so much doom and gloom in the world, isn't there? You know, people, you know, in the media, but you go watch a couple of episodes of that and it makes you realise, you know, it's got the goods and bad of human psyche. It's got a funny element to it. It's got a family element to it. I just think it's, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I just think it's diverse and it's probably a great reflection of family, really. And I really like that. And it's quite warm. It's quite heartwarming as well. Especially this time.
I had a recommendation similar to that a little while ago, which is Arrested Development. So I think it was Arrested Development. Oh no, Schitt's Creek. Schitt's Creek, they said, same thing. The same thing is it shows you that kind of juxtaposition and perhaps this gives you a reality check as to whether you you watch these things and kind of go kind of did something close to that ourselves.
I think you know, I wanted to give you a really intellectual answer. I wanted to give you something that was like, you know, Homer's like the Iliad or something like that, and I was like, no, actually, if you ask me what would I want to watch when I get home, I would say Modern Family. So I was like, I'm not going to go intellectual. I'm going to go, and I don't necessarily class myself down that route anyway. I like, you know, Harry Potter. I like, you know, the things.
The classics.
The classics. Harry. I mean, obviously, I did classics at university. They said that was Harry Potter. That's what it. Well, that's all it was.
Your dissertation was on on the finer points of Harry Potter.
Yeah. How true to life is Harry Potter? That's and the relationship between Harry and Ron. Yeah. No. I mean. I'm just the kind of person that I'm happy to just go home and watch something again and again and again if it's something that's heartwarming.
That's good. Yeah, so, I couldn't agree more. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. So are you prepared to answer some... Oh, I can't speak. Are you prepared to answer some fact or fakes?
Yes.
I picked it about wool.
Okay.
So... first statement is, wool uses 18% less energy than polyester and nearly 70% less water than cotton to produce 100 sweaters. Is that a fact or a fake?
I want to say it's a fact because it is such a great fact. I know it doesn't use as much water. I don't know the percentages, but I know it doesn't use as much water and particularly as much water as cardboard production either. So I know that for one. I don't know about the other one. So I want to say fact, because I would love it if that was true.
You'd be right to say that's a fact. And this is where I started looking to it and go, wow, this is a really pretty impressive.
Send me those facts through then, because that would
natural be fabric. So let's see if I can flummox you with this one then. Wool has a high ignition point of 570 to 600 degrees centigrade and requires more oxygen than is actually available in the air to burn. Is that a fact or a fake?
I think, again, I don't know the numbers, but wool is not very flammable, the opposite of flammable. So I would say that's probably true, if the figures are right.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right again.
Yeah, it's fire retardant. That's the word I was thinking, fire retardant.
Yeah, I always hate that fact that flammable and inflammable actually means means the same thing.
Inflammable, and then I realised it wasn't that. So
and it should be unflammable, but it's not unflammable, and then it's just non-flammable and non-flammable. That's it. Yeah, yeah. I think that's brilliant. Again, you know, I didn't realise that, and I'm in the process of insulating my old house and wool insulation. I thought, yeah, that goes up, but what about the risk of burning? And it doesn't melt. Either, so you don't get any dripping plastic or anything. So
we have set fire to a few bits of wool in the time just to prove the point, and it's quite interesting. It literally just singes,
isn't it? Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. It's better than hair. Okay, I've already lost. So this one for, you know, gain some dignity from me. So wool products usually completely degrade after 6 months in the ground. By contrast, products made from synthetic fibres can take 30 to 40 years to degrade. Is that a fact or a fake?
This is true. Wool's typically 6 to 12 months, depending on the environment. But yeah, it again, depends on the figures. But yeah, wool biodegrade very quickly in comparison to your man-made fibres.
You got a 3-0. I'm devastated. I thought by putting three facts in, instead of trying to fake one of them, you'd at least on one of them go, oh, maybe that's a fake. Well done.
Thank you. Thank
you. I'm devastated.
I kind of had to get those right, didn't I? I'm a wool advocate. That's a kind of
I definitely put you on the on the hot seat there, and you performed admirably, if not better than admirably.
You've seen the wheel on ITV. That's another great show, by the way. And it's basically a quiz show. No, BBC. I can't remember which one. Anyways, you like spin around, and they have specialists who are celebrities. Okay. Who then get asked a specialist question, and they kind of have to know it. So it's a bit like that, isn't it? I kind of had to know it.
Really, and it's nice to put you on the spot. Nice you won. And thank you very much for coming on the Green Elephant Show. Really appreciate it, Josie. Thank you.
I've really enjoyed myself. It's been fun.
Great.
One of my better calls.
We really hope that you found this special B Corp Month episode both informative and entertaining. Make sure you don't miss any of the 31 interviews with B Corporations who are striving to be a force for good. So make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss a thing, and don't forget to spread the word with others. If you have any questions about being or becoming a B Corp, or any comments and suggestions about the show, please do get in touch. You can email studio@greenelephant.show, or visit the website greenelephant.show, or find us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube or Twitter by searching for Green Elipod or The Green Elephant Show. You can also review the show on Google and Apple Podcasts. Join us tomorrow, and we hope you have a sustainable day.